Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Quelled. 3. The last time Silva was in Yana's Edernian palace, she and Corinne had a 7-course feast, starting with soup and ending with nuts. Now, Silva's meager stomach could only handle a bowl of bland porridge. Those berries she ate while hiding in Yana's garden had done a number on her stomach, and anything with more flavor would induce vomit. Yana had helped Silva into her home, cooked her the porridge over a stone fireplace that held an oil painting of spotted cows grazing in a vast green field above it, sat Silva down and instructed her to eat, and disappeared up the rounded staircase. Silva ate slowly, and was halfway through her bowl when Yana came back down in a cotton shirt and baggy pants, a silken blue cap covering her hair. Her face had a ruddy hue that came from scouring it with soap and water. She sat down next to Silva, the polished ashen table could easily fit 16 guests, with a sigh. "All right," Yana said. "Now I feel human again. How's the porridge?" Silva just nodded. "You can use my washroom only after you've finished the bowl," the sorceress said, jabbing a finger at the food. "You look like you haven't had a bath in ages. How long were you skulking in my garden?"
"A month."
"A month? Gods, I don't know how you managed it."
"I had to," Silva said.
The sorceress looked at something Silva placed on the dining room table, a scratched silver hand mirror. "What's this?" she asked in a light tone, picking it up. "Not much good for seeing yourself, is it?"
"Put that down!"
Silva grabbed the mirror and held it with both hands. "I had to scratch it out. It's the first thing I did when I escaped. It's how he teleports. It has to be. How else could he have gotten there in an instant?"
"Okay, I'm sorry," Yana said. "It's obviously very valuable."
"And I can't get rid of it. Corinne bought it for me, and it's the only thing protecting me from him. I can feel that. Do you understand?"
Yana nodded, then asked softly, "Silva, where is Corinne?"
Silva had not seen Yana in 3 years, since she and Corinne last had that 7-course feast. Silva didn't know why, but she'd always assumed Yana was too high up in the magical world to remember the name of 2 petty con artists. Yet Yana acted as if they had shared that feast yesterday. It was all too much to bear. Silva placed the mirror down and put her head in her hands. Yana rubbed Silva's shoulder and said,
"It's all right. You don't need to say any more right now."
"No, you don't understand," Silva said, though not as loud as before. Her head lifted from her hands. "We're in danger. There's someone hunting me, a man who..."
"Shh, shh,"
Yana said, handing Silva a white napkin with a fluffy cat's head monogrammed in the corner.
"You don't need to say any more right now. There'll be plenty of time for that later. You're safe here, I promise. Okay?"
Silva wiped tears from her eyes.
"How long do you plan on staying here?"
"I have nowhere pressing to be," Yana said. The demon in Silva's head told her, more out of protectiveness than malice, that Yana was lying.
"Let's not worry about any of that right now, okay? Let's just focus on eating and washing up and getting some sleep. How does that sound?"
"Okay," Silva said. She took another bite of porridge and looked at her reflection in the polished ashen table. The ashen alleyway left an imprint on their steps, like short-term memories soon to be lost. Silva let Zevo lead the way.
She had never been to Novigrad before, and the cosmopolitan Witcher clearly had. She was afraid to leave Jeremiah alone in that church basement, but Mother Maria assured them she would watch after the craftsman. The barber surgeon said he would be knocked out for the rest of the day anyway. Her concern for Jeremiah was overridden by her desire to find Yana. Zeva was clearly champing at the bit to find the sorceress, and see if Koldenop Teld was lying or not about the magical ritual killing her. Silva found it hard to believe that someone as powerful as Yana could be killed by anything, let alone magic, but the fear that she didn't survive needed to be put to rest, one way or another. "Firework Square's just around the bend," Zevo said, taking them down another twisting and ash-covered alleyway. They had heard more than a dozen panicked citizens say the explosion first took place in the middle of Hierarch Square, which lied at the heart of Novigrad. The Witcher decided to take the back alleys to get there, just to be safe. So far, they had sped by four bodies or so lying against alley walls, looking like passed-out drunks. Silva found it easy not to look at them. She struggled to avoid staring at the dead sewer rats, however, dozens of which lined the alleyways. This was mainly for necessity, so she didn't accidentally step on one. "I hope it's quick," Silva said, because she didn't know what else to say. Her thoughts were both bouncing around like a hare and remaining strangely still like a man in meditation. She both wasn't ready for what she might see, and very ready for what she might see. Didn't want to reach Hierarch Square, and wanted to get there as soon as possible. Didn't want her worst fears confirmed, and wished her highest hopes would come true. These competing thoughts tore at her brain like two dogs fighting over meat. "Here we are," Zevo said, breaking through the alleyway, and immediately stopping in his tracks. He held his arm out to stop Silva from running past him. "Wait. Easy." Silva didn't need to ask why the sudden caution. She had never visited Hierarch Square before, but she always imagined it being filled with colorful carts and stores, idle citizens whispering to each other on stone benches at the base of a large fountain. Perhaps a troupe of actors performing the latest play by Calanetta on a wooden platform tucked into one of the corners. She saw none of those things. What she saw was a sinkhole the width of a merchant sailing ship, and near as deep. Bits of jagged cobblestone jutted out of the newly exposed, clay-like brown earth, like teeth. It looked as if a meteor smashed into the ground and sent bits of masonry, splintered wood, and broken statues into the storefronts lining the square. Despite only taking a few steps into Hierarch Square, Silva and Zevo stood damn near the edge of this crater, on shaky cobblestone ground. The crater filled up 3/4 of the city square. There wasn't a soul around, and it was so quiet Silva could hear the wind whistle. The two of them inched across the ground, until they got a clear view of the crater's center. "Look," Zevo said, pointing. "I think I see her." At the heart of the crater, deep beneath the square, Yana lied huddled up like an animal in the cold. Zevo led the way down into the crater, using the masonry as hand and footholds. Silva slowly followed, careful not to take a wrong step. Following Zevo's path to the footprint gave her mind something else to do. Zevo waited for Silva at the bottom, and they proceeded to Yana together. The sorceress lied still. She was covered in dust. Her eyes were closed, and her face was unmarred by twists of agony. She looked peaceful. She wasn't breathing. "Oh," Silva said, kneeling beside Yana. She touched the sorceress's cold cheek, and Silva's handprint remained in the dust when she pulled it away. "Oh no. Oh no. No." Yana gripped a small stone. Zevo tried to pick the marstone up, but it dissolved like chalk and water at his touch, leaving only a handful of dust. Silva collapsed into Yana, burying her eyes into the sorceress's arm. Racking, wheezing sobs escaped her. Zevo let her cry. Silva blinked and raised her head. She opened her eyes, and a brief look of disappointment fluttered across her face, as if she was waking up and realizing her dream wasn't real. "I don't understand," Silva said. "I don't either," Zevo said. He patted Silva on the shoulder, nodded, then, as if unsure what to do next, looked up at the sky. "Just let me be," Silva said, waving Zevo away. "You don't have to say anything insightful or comforting. Just let me be for a minute."
"Okay, I'll wait for you at the top."
He lumbered his way up the crater, looked back at Silva one last time, and disappeared. Silva wiped her nose with the back of her hand. She tucked a strand of Yana's hair behind her ear.
"I'm sorry we were too late, Silva," the demon said suddenly.
"I'm sure you are," Silva thought.
"We know who did this. Colden Opteld. Do you plan on seeking revenge?"
"What would be the point? Even if I kill Colden, it won't change this. I don't suppose you know any way to bring her back from the dead?"
"No," the demon said with regret in its voice. "There's no way to do so. Once someone crosses to the other side, there's no coming back."
Silva asked her demon that right after Corinne was killed, and she got the same answer, so it wasn't surprising to hear, but part of Silva held out hope that the demon was simply lying back then.
"What's our next move, then?" the demon asked.
"I don't know," Silva thought. "Leaving Novigrad as soon as possible. Maybe heading back to Kedwin. I'm tired, and I want to be someplace safe."
"So you're giving up? Colden shouldn't get away with it."
"No, he shouldn't," Silva snapped. "Killing Colden wouldn't do anything but assuage some of your guilt."
"Are you suggesting I'm somehow at fault for what happened to Yana?"
Silva wasn't thinking, truth be told, but she felt angry and powerless and petty, so she thought, "Isn't it?"
"Absolutely not! I'm no more responsible for Yana's death than I was for Corinne's. You're just looking for someone to blame."
"Don't you dare say that about Corinne," Silva thought.
"It's nobody's fault. Why can't you understand that? You and Corinne were at the wrong place at the..."
A pause. A collection of breath.
"All right. That's it."
"That's what?" Silva thought.
"I'm done with this. I thought if I gave you time and space, you'd be able to see reason and not hold me responsible for Corinne. But that'll never happen. You'll never be able to separate me from it."
"So what are you saying?"
"I'm saying," the demon began, "it's time we start talking about going our separate ways."
Silva looked over her shoulder, then back at Yana's body. "Are you seriously talking about this right now?" she thought. "This is the time you want to bring this up?"
"I've wanted to discuss it for a while," the demon said. "I put it off to give you time to grieve Corinne, but truth is, there would never be a good time to have this conversation. If I waited for another month, you'd be mad at me for holding it in for so long."
"I can't believe you want to discuss this right now," Silva thought.
"Well, I do, so let's discuss it. We're never going to go back to the way things were before Corinne's death. You hold it against me, and even if you didn't, I'd just be symbolic of you making that deal. You'll always be afraid to use my powers, out of guilt, and the fear of summoning him. You won't let me help you, and you refuse to speak with me. We're like strangers living in the same house, so you need to set me free."
"Sounds like you've been rehearsing this," Silva thought. She was rhythmically clenching her fists around the powder-fine grains of dirt surrounding Yana. "You act like you're blameless in everything. You didn't warn me about that stupid fucking riddle in the contract, getting at each other's throats. You act like you've always cared about my well-being, but you had no issues using me as a vessel for your magic, putting me directly in harm's way. You never really cared about me. You were just along for the ride, thrilled you got to exercise your powers."
"That's unfair," the demon said. "I'm not saying I'm blameless, but I did care about you, Silva. I wish you could say the same to me."
"Well, don't expect me to say it now," Silva thought.
"I need some time to be unbound," the demon added.
"Don't bullshit me with excuses," Silva shouted in her head. She flung a fistful of dirt against the crater's wall. Fine powder filled the air. "If you want out, I'm not going to stop you, but there's no way to force you out unless you plan on killing me."
"I don't," the demon said. "I've a risky theory, but I think we could manage it."
"How's that?"
"Strong magic was needed to bind me to you," the demon said. "So strong magic will be needed to excise me. If you experienced a sudden influx of magical power, I could use it as a springboard to separate us. I'd be sent back to my plane of existence, and you'd be rid of me, which is what you really want anyway."
Silva didn't know if that was true. Certainly she had mixed feelings about her demon, amplified after Corinne's death and her own self-reflection on her foolish deal with Gontaro Dim. The demon was right, though. Silva would never be comfortable using his powers again. So maybe it was time to let it go, rather than keep it around to build up resentment. How can I come in contact with magic that strong without it killing me? Silva thought. That's the risky part, but I know who has the amount of magic you need. Silva imagined the demon pointing to Yana's body. Colden used a powerful ritual to bring the Wild Hunt here. If we pursue him, chances are he'll unleash another powerful spell to fight us. That would work. Or we capture him and force him to perform a ritual on us. You want me to stick with the others, then? Silva thought. Just until we capture Colden. Once we're separated, you could do whatever you wish. I won't be around to stop you. But if you run away now, we may be stuck together forever, like two strangers in the same house, Silva thought. I'll think about it. I can't ask any more of you right now, the demon said. I'm sorry, Silva. It's just that we... It's fine. Let's just keep our distance from each other for now, hmm? The demon didn't respond. Silva rubbed her eyes and stood up, brushing the dust off her pants. Her head spun from the blood rush, and she nearly collapsed. I'm sorry, Yana, Silva whispered. I wish I could have saved you. Silva took a deep breath and crawled her way out of the crater. She found Zevo at the top, cross-legged and meditating. A pained look was on his face. Silva gently touched his shoulder, and the Witcher gasped. Silva took a cautious step back. Zevo armed sweat from his forehead. I'm sorry, he said, catching his breath. You're okay, Silva said. Zevo nodded. I was thinking we should take Yana and bury her someplace. I agree, Silva said. Would you like to lead the way? Sure. Zevo stood up, and they descended into the blast crater together. 4. It was the same damned dream again, only slightly different. Jeremiah was lying out on a cold stone slab, while Ezra of Nilfgaard, his business partner in Crag Ross, stood over him with a ceremonial dagger. Typically, she would stab him in the side and slowly slit open his belly. But this time, she lowered the blade into his left leg, just above the kneecap, and started sawing away. The pain was excruciating, and Jeremiah, frozen as if poisoned or drugged, couldn't even scream. He could only bite his tongue and... The dream ended, as it always did. Jeremiah sat up in a cold sweat and put his hand over his heart to feel how fast it was beating. He caught his breath and tried to survey his surroundings. He was sitting on a makeshift cot in what looked to be a storage room. Just where, he did not know. Jeremiah didn't remember anything after their fight with Arthur on the banks of Novigrad. Jeremiah's left shin itched. He leaned forward to scratch it and found nothing but air where his leg should be. Confusion clicked through Jeremiah's mind. His leg, you see, still itched, but there was nothing to scratch. Why was his left leg missing below the thigh? And why was his thigh covered in stained bandages? Just what in the fuck happened to... Jeremiah cried out. He couldn't help it. He felt his left leg move, and Jeremiah swung his right leg over the cot and touched the cold stone ground. He swung his left leg to the ground as well, and it felt so real he was certain that all was well. Then he tried to stand and collapsed onto his stomach. Jeremiah once again cried out. Easy, Jeremiah, he heard Zevo say. The Witcher knelt down, hooked his hands underneath Jeremiah's armpits, and hauled him back onto the cot. Jeremiah didn't want that. He couldn't help but stare at the rounded stump that was once his leg. And God's damned, it still itched. Suddenly, Silva was beside Jeremiah as well. She held out a metal cup in her hand. You should drink some water, she said.
What in the fuck is that going to do?
Jeremiah spat. He pointed to the stump and added,
Unless it can grow back limbs.
If Silva was wounded by the comment, she did not show it. She shook her head. No, it's just ordinary water drawn from a well. It will not cure colds or put more hair on your head or regrow limbs. Still, I think you should drink it. It's good for you. Jeremiah felt his face flush, and he took the cup and drank the water in one gulp. He felt the tepid warmth spread down his chest like tree roots, and he again wondered how long it had been since their fight with Arthur. He handed Silva the cup back and said,
"Thank you. May I have some more?"
Silva went to refill the cup. As she did, Jeremiah looked up at Zevo, feeling more than a little powerless.
"Did you get a new eye?" he asked.
"No, same one it's always been. I just decided to air it out a little." Jeremiah nodded.
"Tell me what happened. Everything, please."
The Witcher spoke as if he was reciting facts from ancient history, and not events that just happened to them personally, about how they fought Arthur, Stesko Dror, and Theo Valander on the banks of Novigrad 36 hours ago, about how Arthur shattered his leg with a crossbow bolt, how Ethramel slew Theo, how Colden escaped, about how Arthur died. Jeremiah remembered now. That son-of-a-bitch Arthur left Jeremiah one more parting gift, it seemed, before robbing the craftsman the pleasure of murdering him.
"And what about Stesko?"
Jeremiah couldn't help but ask.
"He was that sorcerer you've held a grudge with for decades, no? Did he escape too?"
Zevo's jaw tightened. "No, I killed him. It changed a little." Before Jeremiah could ask what Zevo meant, Silva returned with a fresh cup. Jeremiah downed it just as quickly.
"Okay," he gasped. "So they all died. Then what?"
"Zevo and I took you to a barber surgeon while Ethramel secured our shelter," Silva said. She tried not to look at Jeremiah's missing leg, but couldn't help herself. "The rest, I'm sure you could figure out." Jeremiah could, and he found the explanation very unsatisfying. But then again, even if he lost his leg delivering the death blow to a dragon, Jeremiah would find the explanation unsatisfying, because at the end of the day, his fucking leg was gone.
"Okay."
Jeremiah pinched the bridge of his nose. He tried hard to keep his breath steady.
"Okay, where are we then? In Novigrad? Does the city still stand?"
"We're in Novigrad," Silva said. "The Wild Hunt never came back, and the fires were mostly put out by the end of the first day. We're staying with the Priestess of the Eternal Fire. An old friend of Ethramel's, it seems." The sorcerer's very name churned Jeremiah's stomach. He remembered one thing quite clearly from that night. It was Colden thanking Ethramel for giving him information on his mentor Duke Haggard's troop position. And if Sir Isaac of the Order of the Flaming Rose was to be believed, Duke Haggard was killed by Nilfgaardians, defending the Mahakam Pass. It appeared those Nilfgaardian soldiers were led by Colden Ap Teld. And that little fucker only knew where Haggard was because Ethramel told him. This meant, the craftsman extrapolated, that Ethramel was directly responsible for Duke Haggard's death.
"And where,"
Jeremiah said with a drawn expression that the others no doubt mistook for pain,
"exactly is that fucking sorcerer?"
At that, both Zevo and Silva shrugged. He would come back, Jeremiah told himself. That alcoholic piece of shit always came back to them. Time for the last question, then, Jeremiah thought. The one that he was most afraid to ask.
"What about Yana? Is she okay, or is she..."
Silva looked to Zevo, who slowly shook his head. Jeremiah felt his heart twist like a wet rag. It was too much, to lose both Duke Haggard and Yana in such a short span of time. It was too much. Yana was his oldest and closest friend. Someone who had helped him out of dozens of troubles back in Vengerberg. Someone who always knew what to do, and always knew what she was doing. Jeremiah trusted her completely, but now, it was too much. "After we brought you back here to recover, and Ethramel disappeared," Zevo said, "Silva and I explored the city, trying to find her. We found her in Hierarch Square. There was little left, aside from a massive crater. Yana was at the center of it. She looked calm and peaceful, like no harm had ever come to her."
"And where?"
Jeremiah struggled to form the proper words.
"Where did you take her?"
"We buried her just outside the city, under an elm tree. It's peaceful there." Zevo again paused, then added, "I'm sorry, Jeremiah." The craftsman nodded and tried to straighten himself up on the cot.
"Take me there, then. I need to see where she's buried."
"Easy," Silva said, putting a steady hand on Jeremiah's shoulder. "Maybe we should give it some time for you to recover and..."
"Take me there now!"
Jeremiah shouted. He regretted it when he saw Silva recoil. It wasn't her he was mad at. He was mad at the whole damned situation, at the whole damned world, that allowed someone like Yana to be used for a destructive magic ritual.
Please, I need to see it.
Zevo nodded. All right, we'll take you there. The barber surgeon had given Zevo a wooden crutch for Jeremiah to use so he could walk around. The craftsman felt weak balancing on it, and his first few steps were awkward. He had to get the rhythm down. Plant crutch ahead, walk with his right leg to meet it. Plant crutch ahead, right leg to meet it. Plant crutch, right leg to meet. By the time he got the hang of it in the church's basement, he needed to surmount the wooden stairs that led into Novigrad. He did not allow anyone to help him do this. He hacked his way up those stairs with the concentration of a butcher sawing through bone. Jeremiah expected to find chaos boiling over in the streets of Novigrad, as if the Wild Hunt was still actively besieging the city. Jeremiah had nothing to base this on, but he had been in cities that were overrun before, the least of which being the city of Elander, and really, they were all the same once one got down to it. Still, Jeremiah found no such scenes of chaos when he exited Mother Maria's church and stepped onto the cobblestone city streets. What he found instead was infinitely more depressing. Complete emptiness. No one walked the ash-covered streets, or amongst the broken buildings, or along the canal bloated with dead fish, scraps of cloth, and the occasional waterlogged corpse. A few city guards were milling about in the distance, but for the most part, the streets of Novigrad were barren. Its citizens, it seemed, were still in the deep shock phase of the attack. "Best not to dawdle," Zevo said. The Witcher put his hand on Jeremiah's shoulder and pointed to the left with his diminished left hand. "Her grave is that way." Silva followed close behind Jeremiah, ready to catch him or help him up if he stumbled. That was the last thing Jeremiah wanted, so he focused all his effort on keeping his balance with the crutch. This was difficult, as he still felt his phantom leg walking in rhythm with his right. Zevo kept them to the side streets, cutting through a dozen zigzagging alleyways. Jeremiah kept up with no complaint, even as he felt the sweat from his forehead sting his eyes. None of them spoke on this walk that seemed to last 3 hours. They cut through the Novigrad docks and walked across a southern bridge that surprisingly still stood, and even more surprisingly was unguarded. They emerged at the portside gate and walked out of the city with the least amount of scrutiny Jeremiah had experienced since joining up with Zevo in the town of Ashford. A little west of the gate, running along the river, was a solitary elm tree in full bloom, untouched by fire or war. It stood at the top of a small hill and overlooked the city. Jeremiah thought that fitting as he stumbled his way up. His crutch kept slipping in the wet grass, but he managed to keep his balance the whole walk, and was quite proud of that fact. Zevo and Silva stood next to the elm, and the Witcher pointed to a patch of fresh dirt, the size of a grave. "She's resting there," he said. That phrase struck Jeremiah as terribly funny. Resting, as if Yana was simply napping in a cool hole in the ground. Jeremiah laughed sharply, and his ribs constricted his lungs and heart, and his breath was caught in his throat, warm and wet. Looking down at the unmarked grave, Jeremiah finally had to admit that his friend would not be getting out of the ground. He could do no more to help Yana, and she could do no more to help him, the way she first saved a teenaged Jeremiah from a Vengerberg guard when he was caught pickpocketing. Yana was dead, and nothing would change that. Jeremiah had vowed to save her from Arthur, and he was simply a day too late. Jeremiah stumbled towards the tree and held his hand to Zevo.
"Carving knife, please," he said.
"What?" Zevo said.
"She doesn't deserve an unmarked grave. Give me your carving knife."
The Witcher nodded, pulled his knife from his boot, and handed it to Jeremiah. The craftsman gently balanced his crutch against the tree and steadied himself by pressing his left hand to the trunk. He held the tip of the knife a hair away from the tree for at least a minute, as he wondered what to carve. He imagined carving a powerful, solitary symbol that both summarized Yana's strength and wisdom, and their decades-long friendship. But as Jeremiah wrung his brain for something, anything to carve onto the fucking tree that would serve as Yana's tombstone, he came up blank. He had known Yana for half his life, and he couldn't even do this one simple task. So Jeremiah carved the letter J deep into the trunk. He stared at it when he was done, and handed the knife back to Zeva without looking away. He stared at the carved J until he felt physically ill. Then he grabbed his crutch and turned away, a little too quick, and he tripped over himself and tumbled forward. Zeva and Silva caught Jeremiah before he could fall.
"I'm fine," Jeremiah said. "It's fine, thank you. I'm fine."
Something inside Jeremiah gave way in that moment, like a crumbling dam, and he wept into Zeva and Silva's arms.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from The Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.